Let me jump in and talk a little about a hearing we had this morning and a bill that I've introduced on the issue of energy and water and the interdependence of energy and water as part of our larger energy bill that we're trying to develop in the Energy Committee for consideration by the full Senate and the full Congress. We are proposing to get into this issue, have the National Academy of Sciences do a study of the interaction between energy and water. It's clear that the amount of energy available constrains our ability to use water, and the amount of water available constrains our ability to use energy or to produce energy. And we've not adequately considered those two issues together, and some of our policies probably have not been as well informed as they should have been because of our lack of understanding of the two issues. So that's what we had our hearing on. I hope this is something we can proceed with as part of our energy bill in 3 or 4 weeks. That's the main purpose of the hearing. Let me just go ahead and go to questions. I gather that Evan is not with us, so we've got Craig. Are you there, Craig?
I am, Senator. Thank you. Good morning.
Morning.
I'm going to ask, what would you say are some of your most important earmarks that are in this upcoming budget bill?
Well, the earmarks that are in the budget bill to before the Senate today are the ones which both Senator Domenici and I were urging the appropriators to include. I don't have a full list of those in front of me, and I can get that for you.
Do any jump out in your mind?
I would make mistakes if I tried to tell you exactly how much was asked for in different ways. They are almost without exception, they are proposals to assist particular communities in the state with individual projects that they have, wastewater projects in particular, but others as well. But why don't I get you that full list so you can look at it?
Sure, and I'll watch for the email. I appreciate that. Let me ask a quick follow-up. Are you concerned that the president will be really looking at all that stuff line by line like he pledged during the campaign for possible vetoes?
Well, I'm not concerned a bit that the president looks at it. I think every one of the so-called earmarks that I have proposed are ones that I believe are meritorious and have good policy justification for them. And that was the case that we made to the Appropriations Committee at the time we proposed them. They have been passed now through the committees of jurisdiction with full understanding of what the reasons for them were. And I think the president would conclude the same thing if he looked at them.
Senator, thanks.
Uh-huh. Elaine, are you there?
Yes, Senator. I'm just going to listen for the next round, if that's okay.
Okay, that's good. Gillian, how about you?
Good morning. I'm here.
Good morning.
Last week, you heard from the U.S. Department of Energy Secretary Stephen Chu about future directions for energy research and development. Where does his major focus seem to be going?
Well, I think the Secretary of Energy, Stephen Chu, has made the case for the same priorities that the president has talked about, both in the campaign and since he's been president, and that is increased energy efficiency, the major benefits that the country can achieve through increased energy efficiency in housing and transportation and in industrial processes. He's also, of course, committed to trying to move toward a low-carbon economy with more production of energy from renewable sources, and he talked about the importance of that. So those are two of the major thrusts that he has talked about repeatedly, and he did again last week when we had our hearing.
Do you think Sandia and Los Alamos National Laboratories will receive more energy research and development money from with him in as the director of the Department of Energy?
Well, I think that with him as Secretary of the Department of Energy, I do think you'll see substantially increased funding for research on energy-related issues. And Los Alamos and Sandia National Laboratories will be in a position to compete for that funding with other national laboratories. So I think there is an opportunity there. It's not as though the department or the Congress, either one, are going to be specifying where that money is spent, which of the laboratories it will be spent at. But clearly there are a lot of capable people at our laboratories who specialize in many of the issues that are involved with energy production and transportation and transmission and use. And I think we're in a good position to compete for that.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Craig, we're back to you. Did you have another question?
I do, Senator. What do you make of the drastic cut in spending for Yucca Mountain?
Well, I think everyone's aware that Senator Reid, who's our majority leader here in the Senate, represents Nevada, has historically opposed the use of Yucca Mountain as a repository for high-level waste. He's made no secret of that. And he has, of course, urged the appropriators here in the Senate repeatedly to cut back on the funding for that project. And I think that is somewhat being reflected in the administration's position. I know that President Obama also indicated his opposition to going forward with the Yucca Mountain repository as part of his presidential campaign.
So where do you put all the waste if not there? What do you do with it in the meantime?
Well, I think in the meantime it stays where it is, and that is primarily it's located at the nuclear power plants where the waste is generated. I think it's clear the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has indicated that there is no immediate threat to human health or safety as a result of it staying right where it is. So there's no real urgency in moving it. Now, I do think long term we need a plan for where we're going to put that for on a permanent basis. And frankly, we don't have that. We have worked on the assumption that it would eventually wind up at Yucca Mountain. There is still an application pending with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for authority to construct the repository at Yucca Mountain. And that application has not been withdrawn, but there is no alternative that is agreed upon at this time.
Do you see any further weight or pressure being put on WIPP?
Oh, I think WIPP is pointed to by many as an example of a success story where we have successfully disposed of nuclear-related waste. Of course, it is not the high-level waste that we're talking about putting at Yucca Mountain. As yet, there is not any proposal to consider putting high-level waste at the WIPP site.
Thanks, Senator.
Uh-huh. Elaine, we're back to you. Did you have a question?
Hi, Senator. I do have a question. I'm looking at this press release about the recovery package resource guide, and I'm wondering if you could give some details about what kind of information New Mexicans could expect to find in that resource guide that would help them know how to benefit from the funding in the recovery package.
Let me just look at this a second here. Well, I think the guide is essentially an effort to provide contact information so that people in the state, communities in the state of New Mexico that would like to avail themselves of some of the funds contained in this economic recovery package that was passed through the Congress and signed by the president would be able to contact the appropriate agencies, the appropriate officials to make application for some of that funding. That's the purpose of the so-called resource guide, and we hope it'll accomplish that purpose.
Would you mind giving me a couple of examples of, like, who is a person who might say, oh, I want to benefit in this way, I would contact this agency?
Well, obvious examples would be the various communities in our state. There are, I think, virtually every community in New Mexico has some type of request into the federal government for assistance with wastewater treatment activity, for example. And there is a substantial amount of money in this stimulus package or this economic recovery package that is available for that purpose. So what we're doing is saying, here's the contact information. If you are the county manager for a county or the city manager for a city that would like to obtain those kinds of funds. In the case of rural hospitals, if you would like to have access to some of the federal funding that's being made available for rural hospitals to maintain their services and increase those healthcare services, we give a different contact information for that.
Thank you, Senator.
Uh-huh. Gillian, are you still there?
Yes, I am. And I have a totally different subject going on.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the Senate Bill 379, which is the Performance Rights Act?
I'm just generally familiar with it. I have not taken a position on it, but I'm generally familiar with what it tries to do.
Okay. What do you think of it?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not on the committee that I think this is a bill that's pending in the Judiciary Committee. Senator Leahy is the prime sponsor. It tries to grant performers of sound recordings rights to be compensated by broadcasters when the broadcasters essentially play their music or broadcast their music. It sounds to me like a complication that would be hard to implement or enforce. I know the Broadcasters Association has come out and strongly opposed to it.
Well, they're considering another fee on top of what we pay now. Do I have that understood right? To include.
Well, you're sort of educating me. I don't know.
Okay, because I read it and I wasn't quite sure what it said, and I was hoping you could tell me.
I have here a little description of it, which says that it establishes a flat annual fee in lieu of the payment of royalties for individual broadcast stations.
And then it gets down here and says it prohibits anything in this act from adversely affecting the royalties payable to songwriters. And so, to me, if you're making a flat fee, you might be affecting royalties payable to songwriters. And I got confused right there.
Well, I can understand the confusion, and I share it. So, as I say, I haven't taken a position on the bill. I haven't studied it enough to know where I would come out.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
That was my question.
Okay. Craig, are you still there?
I am, Senator. Senator Bingaman, let's talk a little bit about construction jobs resulting from economic stimulus law. I'm reading here that a couple conservative think tank groups are afraid that up to 15% of the 2 million jobs that these projects are predicted to create could wind up going into the hands of illegal immigrants, and they're questioning why didn't Congress use the Department of Homeland Security program E-Verify. Your thoughts on that?
Well, as I understand it, the E-Verify program is still in place. In fact, I believe in this bill we are currently debating on the Senate floor, we propose to extend the E-Verify program for another year. Now, there have been some questions about the way it's being implemented, but I think for the time being, everyone's happy, at least that I've spoken to, happy to keep it in place. Now, it is a voluntary program, and there are quite a few employers that have taken advantage of it and used the E-Verify program as a way to screen potential employees. I think the questions that have arisen about it have to do with the accuracy of it. The estimate I've seen is that about 4% of the people who are shown not to be legally resident in the country, in fact, are. And therefore, you've got about 4% of the people who apply for jobs who presumably get turned down without adequate justification and are turned away. Even though they are legally here or legal citizens of the country. So that's been a concern, and that's been a reason why folks wanted to try to make the system more reliable before it was mandated.
Based on that 4% margin of error, do you not trust E-Verify?
Well, based on what I've been told, I would say that That's a fairly high error rate. If you're one of the people in the 4%, it would be quite disturbing to apply for a job and be told that you're not eligible to be considered because you're not legally here in the country, if in fact you were.
So based on that, you're not really, you would not support making the E-Verify mandatory requirement?
Well, that's, I think, one of the reasons that it was not made mandatory initially was that we wanted to get it up and running and ensure that it was reliable before we considered making it mandatory. And that process is going on. But as I say, it is up and running. It is used by a great many employers. But I think the reluctance to make it mandatory has been a result of the questions about its reliability.
Got it. Thank you.
Elaine, are you still there?
I am. And I'd like to hear some of the details about the Drug Rebate Equalization Act that you introduced today. How does that legislation propose to impact Medicaid in New Mexico?
Just give me a minute here. Yeah, this is legislation that allows health plans that are run by Medicaid managed care organizations to get rebates on prescription medications just as states do today. It would ensure that health plans keep a comprehensive care coordination system for their patients, but it also has the ability to save the government, we estimate, about $11 billion over 10 years. We think this would be good legislation. It would save taxpayers money. I think it's good legislation whether we enact major health care reform or do not enact it this year. And for that reason, we put it forward.
In New Mexico, is Medicaid mostly administered by New Mexico, by the state of New Mexico?
Well, the state Medicaid programs, yes, the state oversees the Medicaid program, and under current law, the Medicaid program is entitled to receive the best price for prescription drugs for their beneficiaries. So what we want to do is to ensure that this applies to health plans that are run by Medicaid managed care organizations as well.
Thank you, Senator.
Uh-huh. Gillian, are you still there?
Yes, I am, but that was all the questions I had. Now I'm just listening.
Okay. Craig, how about you?
Just one last question, kind of a third rail topic here. I want to know how you intend to vote on future cost of living raises when that comes up, cost of living raises for members of Congress.
Well, as I understand, what's coming up is a proposal to say that Congress should vote on that issue instead of having any kind of automatic cost of living adjustment apply to Congress as it does to other federal workers. And I support the concept of having a vote. I think that that's an appropriate thing to do.
Thanks.
Uh-huh. Let me see. Elaine, did you have any more questions?
I'm good to go today, Senator.
Okay. Well, thank you all very much for talking with me. Bye-bye.